It's 8:10. Good morning. This is 105.1 WYYY. I'm John Murphy. Marty Green is here. Bob is on his way to La Crosse for a meeting, but he'll be back with us tomorrow. The Wisconsin Credit Union hotline is open at 715-836-9299. That's 715-836-9299. Catherine Schaaf is here, the Eau Claire County Administrator and Corporation Counsel. Keith, is it Zems or Zames?
Zames.
Zames, good. I thought I had been pronouncing it correctly, but over all these years, if I was pronouncing it incorrectly, I'd been making a mistake for about 30 years, something like that, or nearly that, it seems. Let's talk a little bit about the living wage ordinance and what this actually means, and kind of explain it, first of all, what this change is.
The living wage ordinance is a recent ordinance enacted by the Board of Supervisors that stipulates that vendors will pay their employees according to the federal poverty wage limit. And so it stipulates a certain payment for vendors to whom it applies. And there are a number of exemptions to the living wage ordinance. And it only applies to those vendors who are contracting with the county for very specific services. So if a vendor has $30,000 of business within a contract or less, or 20 employees or less, they're not actually, it doesn't apply to them. And so right now we have a total of 18 potential vendors who could be affected within DHS. Four potential contractors within our aging and disability resources, and one in our general purchasing. And so the actual ordinance takes effect as of January 1st, 2017. However, most of our contracts do not renew until 2018. And so we're in the initial stages of beginning to identify how we as a county are going to respond to this and how we as a county are going to implement.
How this ordinance started and got going is probably a fair enough question to say, well, was this something that came from county staff that they looked at things? Was this something that came from the county board itself? Did it come from citizens? You know, how did this all come into being?
The initial interest came from a number of county board supervisors who brought forward the initial resolution to the board, and then the board actually referred it to three different committees to begin working and doing some of the background work on what are the implications of the ordinance, how will it affect county government, how will it affect the county as a whole and individual vendors.
I'm sure you've heard plenty about this because it's often living wage gets mistaken with minimum wage. Two different things. And the county, some people may not be aware of this, but there are very specific laws that don't allow a county to do anything with the minimum wage. That's the purview of someone else. Is this, some have said, and Keith, you might be able to speak to this a little bit, is this an end around to some degree that this is a way to affect the minimum wage without really affecting the minimum wage?
Statutorily, under Chapter 104 of the Wisconsin statutes, a county ordinance can address paying a certain minimum wage to different categories of employees. One are county employees, two are employees performing work for the provision of services to the county, and there's a third category regarding performing work funded by financial assistance from the county. The primary emphasis of this was to look at county employees and more specifically at the employees providing service contracts to the county. So there's clear statutory authority to do that. What the county can't do is the county could not say everybody in Eau Claire County has a minimum wage which is different than what in our case the state has established, which is the same as the federal government, and that's $7.25 an hour.
Are there some unintended consequences out of this from the standpoint of you're hoping, ultimately, I think any county, any governmental organization is hoping for more vendors, not fewer, you're, in terms of the bidding process. The more people you can bring to the table, the better, usually. But competitively, you get better prices and that sort of thing. Is one of the unintended consequences that this may force out some vendors from being able to be involved?
I think it's too early to tell. There may be vendors who will choose to no longer contract with the county. There may be others, though, that will step in to fill that gap. We just don't know. the ordinance in some respects actually favors those who are smaller. So it may be beneficial to smaller agencies and smaller vendors that want to provide service but in the past have not been able to compete. So we don't know if it will actually help competition or hurt competition, but you're correct. We always want more competition when it comes to bidding for service.
It certainly would make sense that that's what you're hoping to do. Catherine Schaff is here from Eau Claire County, the Eau Claire County Administrator, and Keith Zames, the Corporation Counsel. You can call us at 715-836-9299. That's 715-836-9299. Marty is out there somewhere as well, and he'll have a question or two, and he'll take your calls here at 715-836-9299. That's 715-836-9299. Talking about the living wage ordinance and what this means, I know it's been an unpopular thing that's come up with all kinds of pieces of legislation, but there are some things that hold true. When anybody says, well, we'll pass it and then we'll, you know, read the document later, that's not exactly what's at play here. But what's at play here is we don't know what we don't know on both sides of this. There was a fair amount of, still is, a fair amount of fear-mongering that came from a group of people that, you know, companies are going to have to shut down. They'll no longer be able to bid on projects. They're going to have to get rid of their employees and they're going to go out of business. The fact is, there's a fear that might happen. They don't know that for sure until this rolls into place. You're kind of in the same situation, is that you don't know exactly how this is going to go until you go through some of these instances and see how this plays out.
You're exactly correct. We, at this point, are putting together the pieces that we need to put together so that we can work with vendors, so that we can inform them of those who would actually be affected. We're putting together frequently asked questions so that they can understand what the ordinance truly is and how it may impact their operations. And then we do anticipate that as we renew contracts and have those conversations, that living wage and how it may impact the actual organization will be part of that conversation. And so we're not saying that there is not going to be a consequence of some sort, but at the same time, we're not fearful that we won't be able to work through the issues as they arise, because we're going to take it on a contract-by-contract basis and work through each of the issues that are there.
Virtually every kind of governance that we have at every level has to rely a little bit on public input and serving the public, but also getting enhanced information from experts in the field. There were some suggestions that, you know, I don't know if I trust county board supervisors to know enough about the living wage, if that's appropriate. My guess is, yeah, but they're representatives of the people. School board members are. And
yes.
So part of what their job is to listen to perhaps what the people want, and then, but also get informed decisions. Some of these supervisors, have they reached out to, and I'm sure they have, to gather more information about what the impact might be for the county itself?
Well, the supervisors themselves did a lot of work on this. They actually talked to constituents. They've talked to the vendors themselves. They've talked to potential individuals who would be affected by this, as well as a number of different interest groups. I think that there is a very strong element of desire for what would be perceived as social justice within Eau Claire County, and that those who are interested in that were also part of the input that went into this dialogue around the living wage ordinance and what they hope to achieve with it.
I think we got a phone call coming in. I'll have Marty get that for us if you want to take care of that, Marty, and then we'll put that call on. In fact, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back with more in just a moment. Catherine Schaff is here, and Keith Zames. If you've got questions about the living wage ordinance, you can call us here at 715-836-9299. That's 715-836-9299. This is 105.1 WYYY. I'm John Murphy along with Marty Green. Let's go to our phones here on 105.1 WYYY. Good morning. You're on with Catherine Schaff, the Eau Claire County Administrator, and Keith Zames, Corporation Counsel, as we're talking about living wage. Brad, go ahead.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
I called when this first passed and talked to you guys, John.
Yeah.
And I was just completely disgusted by this decision. I think that, you know, basically there's a lot of I don't know being said right now. Well, we don't know if vendors are going to go, or we don't know if we're going to get better service. We don't know anything except what we do know it's going to cost me, the taxpayer, more money. There's no way that it's not. And I how can you do that? Just go and do it for your own political gain. I mean, this is the reason that I just don't understand this at all. Why didn't you send out a, you said you talked to constituents. Well, nobody asked me, why didn't we send out a flyer or put out an email or do something saying, hey, well, how do people out there feel about this? No, but you just did it. And I'm just disgusted, and it's going to cost me money, and I'd like to know what you have to say about that.
Well, I guess your question...
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Catherine.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Sorry. I guess your question really is, how much is it actually going to cost the Eau Claire County taxpayer in general?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is a question that you have to really back into it a little bit, because the way that the average Eau Claire County taxpayer will be either affected or not affected actually by this depends on their property tax. And the property tax itself, the county is only 21% of your actual property tax bill, county government per se. The largest components of that are in the areas of public safety and transportation. Those are the two larger components of that. Health and Human Services is a component of that. The Health and Human Services area is going to be the largest department that's actually going to be affected by living wage, and there are a number of federal and state funding sources that actually fund those services. And so when you start breaking it down as to how it affects the actual individual taxpayer in Eau Claire County, the amount that you will actually see would be minimal at best. And at the end of the day, the county is limited as to how much it can actually increase their revenue, meaning the property tax levy. And because of that, we will have to make adjustments potentially in other areas to be able to implement this. And I think there are still so many variables that are attached to this that we don't even have exact numbers on how much, dollar-wise, each individual contract will be affected.
I'm sorry to interrupt, ma'am. And that's what's really got me upset today, is you don't have a clue. Why do it until you know what it's going to do? You said 18 times this morning, well, we don't know about this, we don't know about that. Figure it out and then do it. And then ask the people if they want you to do it. Don't just do something like this. It's going to cost us money, and it's just your political standpoint. There's a great many people in this town who don't believe the same way that you do that should be done.
Well,
why just... Do it.
Now, Brad, just to be certain here, and I want to set the stage here. Catherine Schaaf is the Eau Claire County Administrator who works at the behest of the county board, which, by the way, voted 18-11. This is a democratic process, if I'm not mistaken. That means there were 11 board supervisors that were against this, and they spoke up, and they volleyed for what they volleyed for. They lost. They lost. That's what happens in all of these governmental decisions.
That I understand that, John, but the other part of that is there's nobody ever, these are all almost all uncontested. These are people, you know, nobody has the time to do this. And so I definitely give these people credit for doing it. But I mean, it's not like we have a lot of choices here. 10 people sign up and 10 people get signed in because nobody else is going against them.
And yet they serve. I mean, they still serve and they still have to cast those votes.
Absolutely.
That's how the system
thank
is.
For that. But if you're going to make decisions like that, I'm just trying to say it. I don't believe it's super democratic here. I think if you're going to make a big policy decision like that, maybe you should go to the people.
Oh, like do a referendum sort of thing.
A referendum or just a survey. I mean, they've done surveys in the past. They know where we all live. Send us a letter. I mean, we've got $5,000 to spend on poverty studies. Can we spend a little money to figure out if people want to do this?
Interesting point, and I know I'm glad you brought. Thanks, Brad, for your call. I want to get to another call. I'm glad you brought up surveys because that was actually, believe it or not, the surveys that were conducted. There's even contentiousness with regard to those surveys as to when they were returned and how they were returned, and you know, some people saying, well, if people don't respond back to us, that's actually a pretty good sign, and others saying, no, it's the exact opposite. That's not a good sign at all if people don't return some of the information. Yes, sir.
One thing I was going to say is, in a body like the county board, mm-hmm. you cannot have a referendum for everything that is brought up by the county board. some things are brought up for referendum. You can't have a referendum for everything that's proposed by the county board, right?
Right, right.
Yes. And to your point about surveys, we did survey the vendors, mm-hmm. and we received actually fairly good response from our vendors. And the responses that we received were, I would say, inconclusive, because some had indicated a positive response that it would potentially affect them. Others said that it would not. And of course, as you noted, some did not respond at all. And we could not compel them to respond. And we wouldn't want to draw intent out of someone who, you know, from their silence, that they were either for or against or had
right. I think some conclusions were being perhaps or could have been drawn from that, and you can't draw from that because, you know, a no answer doesn't necessarily mean anything. You can't take that as concrete proof. Let's go to the next call. Brian is with us. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, and please don't cut me off after my first question here, John, because I've got a couple of them.
Okay.
The first would be, how many responded?
On the survey?
Yes.
We had, let me just check here, I've got to look. I think we had, pardon?
This is an open book test, so we do let her look, you know.
So I was just going to say, while she's looking, I just wanted to say I recognize that Catherine and Keith are not elected officials. So
right.
They're not the ones that made this decision. So anyway, sorry, how many responses?
I believe that we had around 51% response.
Okay, but how many is that?
I don't have that number with me.
Okay, and of the 51% who responded, what percentage were in favor of doing this?
I'm going to have to extrapolate that number because there are a number of different questions, and the question was not stated as, are you in favor or are you opposed? It was simply questions about how will this affect your business. So if
okay.
I were to guess how many of them were in favor, I would say the majority expressed concerns about implementation details and how it would affect their operation.
Okay. So we have just learned that the majority of the businesses that responded to the survey were concerned about this bill. I mean, it's funny that we didn't ask, are you for or against, but were concerned about negative impacts it would have on their business. We've also learned that the county board, by a vote, one vote, voted not to table this. And we have heard, as Brad mentioned, repeatedly over and over and over again, that we don't know what the effect of this is going to be. But we did hear from Catherine that taxes will go up, some small percentage, but again, we're going through the death of a thousand cuts here, and that services will have to go down because taxes can't be raised too much, so we're going to have to take certain money from one place to put it into another, and we can all guess where that money is going to come from. But we don't know, and so literally this is Eau Claire County's version of Obamacare. We'll pass it and then find out what's in it. I mean, and it is mind-boggling. So what I say to Brad and what I say to anyone else who's listening, I will be listing on my Facebook. If you don't like me, come find me on Facebook or on Twitter. I will be listing the 18 names of the people that voted for this bill. If you live in their district and you believe in fiscal responsibility, find out who your county board is, how they voted, and run against them in 2 years. Spring every even-numbered year in the spring, run against your county board member. Now, here's my question for Catherine. She mentioned social justice. Explain to me what your definition of social justice is. And further, how is it just that two people who are making $11 an hour and own a home are going to have their property taxes go up, so that somebody who the marketplace of consumers has not determined the value of their wage is $13 an hour, is going to get an artificial and government fiat bump in their wage? How is that just?
I'll speak to your question about definition of social justice, because that is the component of this that was put before the body by proponents of the living wage ordinance.
Mm-hmm.
And their concern was that anyone who is employed is able to make a wage that would allow for a family of four to be able to afford the very basic needs of life, whether it be food or ability to access necessary services, and not have to rely primarily upon subsidized resources from county government, whether it be food stamps or other types of services that supplement a lower income. And that is the definition that the proponents of the living wage ordinance put forward.
Okay, I appreciate that. And let me ask you this final question then. Is there some language in the ordinance that only those employees who are in fact supporting a family of four will get the wage, the living wage mandated by the county government? Or will someone who works for one of these vendors who is a single 20-year-old male living with a buddy in an apartment on Water Street going to also get that raise that is pegged off of a living wage for a family of four?
The living wage ordinance does not have language that delineates different individuals by either their age, their gender, their race, or any other limiting factor.
I didn't say age, race, or gender. I said whether or not they're actually supporting a family of four, which is what this living wage is quote-unquote pegged upon.
And my answer was that we do not have any language in the ordinance that specifically points to that type of delineation.
Although, Brian, I'm going to let you go, but if I could pass along a compliment, way to paint a picture there. I mean, you did paint a picture of who that individual is that you're talking about, and that's precisely what's at the core of much of this argument. It is, and we're going to, this is why people are struggling with this, because what somebody is considering something to be fair, somebody's saying is, whoa, I don't get that deal. I want that deal. Give me that deal. That's unfair. And that's what we're trying to get to is some fairness here. Tell you what, Steve, Daisy, hang on. We're going to come back. You still got a couple of minutes for us. Yes, okay. I'm always cognizant of their time. They got a few other things to do besides these morning radio programs. Me, this is all I got to do, so I'm good. It's 8:34. We got more coming up here on 105.1 WYYY. It's 8:36. This is 105.1 WYYY. It's interesting, during the break, and a thought kind of occurred to me along the way, too, is, and we could spend a whole nother session on what a county administrator does, what your role is, and what a corporation counsel does, what your role is. You're in that interesting position where quite often you're the facilitators, the administrators. You've been given a mission that you neither necessarily have to agree or disagree with. It's you've been given this piece of business and they say, we would like you to do this, you know, and it's not really your place to debate it or to say, no, we don't like that policy. We just don't want to do it, you know?
You're correct. We take the final will of the board and we implement it to the best of our ability. Mm-hmm. And then we work that into the overall operation so that we fulfill their will with the appropriate intent. And that's always our goal, is to implement and make sure that we do it to the fullest ability and to make sure that all interests are met.
And yet, where you can, obviously in both of your roles, you advise wherever you can, so there's not policies put into place that are obviously destructive to the county or totally cost inefficient or would cause future damage.
Correct.
Yeah.
We look at and provide information to the board prior to their decisions regarding the legal sufficiency of action they would take, as well as potential implications.
All right. And the only thing I would, and I want to get to Daisy here and James and everybody else, the only thing that I would, one more thing I would say about Brian's take on it is find out who your supervisor is and run against them. The only other thing I would put in that, or here's an idea. Talk to your supervisor first of all and find out what their take is. They might actually have some good points as to why they voted in favor of this. They might actually sway your vote, believe it or not. They might actually say, oh, now that you put it that way, now that I understand this a little more, I'm actually with you. We don't always have to jump to light speed. We don't always have to run against somebody because we don't like what they put into place. Here's a thought. We can talk with them. It's possible. We can communicate with one another. We do it all the time, every day on this program. Daisy, go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, Daisy. You're on.
Oh, okay. Hey, first of all, I'd like to say thank you both for coming on the air and taking some of the statements of the people. I myself have been paying attention to this issue, and I called almost every one of those supervisors on the county board, And everyone that I spoke with, and if they saw my number listed, whether I was in their area or not, district or not, would call me back mm-hmm. to hear what I had to say and why I supported or not supported, and I did support the living wage, and my reasons for it, and they asked me questions, and they were very interested, very kind. I didn't run into one supervisor who was not interested in what I had to say and why, you know, I felt the way that I did. I was impressed. I was really impressed. And in addition, I thought it was very interesting because I think, you know, they're going to be evaluating this impact, you know, as this goes along from what I understand. And it also, if the truly small entrepreneur, small businessmen, you know, are listening and always come up with big ideas and they know everything, this may be helpful to some of the small entrepreneurs and small business in our area that don't hire large numbers of people, pay them really low wages, and come in and take the bids away from our local people. So there's a lot to consider in this, and I thank you guys so much for listening to us this morning.
That's an interesting point that a lot of people don't consider, is there is a possibility of local vendors get more engaged rather than the illustration there of someone that, you know, does it at a more cut-rate fashion because they can afford to do it because they've got economy of scale there, that they can do that sort of thing.
And that's one of the things that when we talked about the bidding, that when you said it could go one way or another, it mm-hmm. actually may expand individuals who in the past had not considered actually being part of that process may actually consider being part of that process now. One of the things that Daisy indicated that I'd like to just kind of pick up on a little bit, though, is the idea of citizen input. And I think that the board takes citizen input very seriously. They welcome calls from constituents. They're willing and eager to engage in conversations with individuals. And they have a number of different venues for receiving public comment. I mean, we've got information that we put on our website. Supervisors welcome not only calls, but you're able to write letters. You're able to show up at meetings and present your views at the meetings. And so public input, citizen engagement are all crucial components of what county government is and does. And it's something that through our processes we look to make even more robust on a regular basis. But I appreciate that they have indicated the work that our supervisors do in regard to obtaining that input and having those conversations.
Following the course of this ordinance, and not to get all Norman Rockwellian on you, but this was one of those examples, I believe, that this is county government, the way county government operates. You think this wasn't contentious? You think this still isn't contentious? There weren't delays, there weren't votes, there weren't supervisors literally just about yelling and screaming at each other. Oh, there were, and there still are. And an 1811 vote tells you that this is not a slam dunk. When you look at any particular board and you say, oh, another 9-0 vote, another 9-0 vote, another 9-0 vote, that sometimes concerns you. Are they walking in lockstep? That's not what's happening here. What's happening here is a lot of different discussions and concerns and issues being brought forward, and that's what we're seeing. Let's go with James next. Good morning, James. You're on 105.1. Glad to have you here.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
A couple of questions. So, you know, we've heard of that, you know, you have the exemption for the under 30,000, and you have the exemption for under 20 employees. But there's also an exemption. I haven't heard anybody talk about, which I question, because I'm assuming these would include large companies, medium companies, small companies, whatever the size, because there's nothing in there about size. But it also has something that that carves in there that all the requirements of this section can be waived for employees that are covered by a collective bargaining agreement. So we've got a carve out in there that says, but if you're a union, you don't have to follow this. So a union shop, whatever the service may be, can come in and say, everybody else is forced by the county government to pay X amount of dollars. well, we're going to pay X minus 50 cents, come in under the bid, we're going to get the bid. So I'm curious, like, where that comes in, what that has to do with any of the purpose of this proposal, if the purpose of this proposal is just to make sure that these businesses are paying this much so that they all get that living wage.
Yep.
So I'd be curious about that. And then I was wondering if you can give some specific examples of jobs that these would be. And I'm not trying to say that you're trying to be deceitful at all. That's not how I mean it. But in so many of the different discussions on it, we've heard a lot of, well, companies that have less than $30,000 worth of business, or companies that have this many employees, or it would affect about this percentage of contract. But what types of jobs and how much are those people being paid now? Because I'm assuming they're being paid by some kind of industry standard.
Right, right. James, two excellent questions. I'm going to let Corporation Counsel Ames handle most of that.
Okay. The answer to your first question, James, is that the collective bargaining exemption just would apply to collective bargaining agreements the county has. And right now the county only has one collective bargaining unit, and that's the non-supervisory deputy sheriffs in the sheriff's department. As a practical matter, their wage rates are all above what would be required under the minimum wage ordinance.
All right. So
we have to put that in there then, because it doesn't say anything about, I mean, all it says in the section, it says the requirements of this section may be modified or waived as regards employees who are covered by a collective bargaining agreement between the employer and a bona fide union, where the parties of such collective bargaining agreement expressly specify their intent in the agreement. Doesn't say anything about it being, like, contractually with the county. It just says any employees, when all the other statements talk about the businesses, the contractors, things like that.
And I understand your point, but the way we've interpreted that provision is that it would just apply to collective bargaining agreements with county employees, which I believe is consistent. The genesis of this ordinance came from Milwaukee County ordinances and is consistent with language in their ordinance and also consistent with how they administer it.
And as to the other point, what types of jobs are involved here? Because, James, I think that is an excellent point of who's involved. Who would this be?
And I think just anecdotally then, one example might be in our Aging and Disability Resource Center, they contract for meal services for the elderly. And as part of that then, they would actually be contracting with different entities to prepare the meal and then deliver that meal. So it would be anyone who prepares or is part of that process. So it could be someone in the kitchen. It could be, you know, the person actually doing the preparation of the meal, the person delivering the meal. It affects those different participants that are involved in providing that service, that direct service.
James, thanks for your call. We appreciate it. Anything more real quick, and then we got to run. But
I just want to make sure. So anybody involved in that process, so, I mean, we're taking now, the county feels like it's their duty to pay the dishwasher at a place that prepares the food a wage to support a family of four. I mean, that's what, to me, it's like when you're talking about everyone in that process, well, that's great, except the guy that you have drive the food from point A to point B, I would imagine most businesses aren't looking at that as like, you know, advertising as, hey, here's a great career opportunity. You can support your family with it. I mean, those are really the types of jobs that the county feels like it's their job with taxpayer money to completely support.
Well, I think that the one thing is with the application, it's with direct services and not necessarily with some of those back office folks. So it's those directly involved, but it's that direct service provision, not back office folks, that would be actually included in that. And so I think that that's one of those points where I think you bring up an issue of every time that we go through these contract renewals, we're going to have some discussion with the people that we're contracting with so that they understand how it applies and how it does not apply, and we'll be going through that process.
Now, there's not the, and James, these are great points. Thank you for your call. I appreciate it. The Now, there's not the discussion on the other side, though, right? I mean, I don't think we talk about, is it the county's job to raise the rate? Is it the county's job to be concerned with how in the past, did you have any purview there where it could say, hey, you know, we're going to hire you here. You're not paying your folks below minimum wage, are you? You're not paying them $2 an hour to do all this. Before, did you really have any full way of checking that? Beyond the legalities, if they have to operate within the legalities of the laws and whatever, but as we know, not everybody always does that either.
And you're correct. I mean, this actually provides for a way that the county can actually insert into those vendors that it contracts with. But you're right; it doesn't affect minimum wage. It does not affect the county as a whole. And there would be no other mechanism by which county government could actually participate in this way in the discussion.
Yeah, it's. I know this is private, so it doesn't hold up exactly. But it's the classic example of you hire a contracting company to come work on your house. Mm-hmm. You never discussed it leading up to that. You get there and you find out that the contracting company, they swear all the time. They just keep swearing. They're just yelling, and you got kids around. You got foul language. And what the contracting company is saying, well, you never asked. You never asked. That was never part of the contract. That was never part of the point here. You never brought the issue up. Sometimes you got to bring the issue up to say, this is what we're aiming for. This is what we like. This is who we want to work with. It's 8:51. Dan and Steve, we're going to be back with you. We've got to take another break here. We might hear from Marty yet, too, on 105.1 WYYY. To load up the backpacks for kids to go back to school. This year, we're also trying to collect 1,051 books for kids, and they could be new or gently used books for kids. Literacy Chippewa Valley helping out with that and coordinating all that, so we can get. It's so important that kids read early and are read to early, and that books are introduced into the home. And so this is what we're going to try to do with all this, and also load up some of those backpacks so kids have school supplies. We want to thank some of our sponsors: Eau Claire Auto Parts, Woods and Water Realty, Once Upon a Child, and of course Chilson Subaru, the Boys and Girls Club of the Greater Chippewa Valley. It looks like some storms moving into the area. Could be just a touch damp for National Mustard Day out at Silver Spring Foods today. The Lemonade Day that was going to be today, by the way, from the Boys and Girls Club, that's been moved to tomorrow from 10 to 3. And that'll be at about 30 different locations around the Chippewa Valley. Let's go back to our phones here, the Wisconsin Credit Union Hotline, with Dan. Hey, Dan.
Hey, good morning. Hey,
good morning.
Discussion today.
Oh, thank you.
You know, this is a 10,000-foot view that I have, but whenever I hear this discussion or the minimum wage discussions, to me, it's just, it's very reflective of, I think, the left-wing movement to slowly chip away at personal responsibility and personal accountability. And I think Bob said it once, the fact of the matter is life's choices have consequences. And I'll give you an example. When I went to college, one of the reasons that I finished my degree was the bartending job and the summer job I had filling cracks in blacktop, and what I made, it really, really stunk. And that's a motivator to move along. And I think the fact of the matter is most of these jobs that minimum wage affects, she mentioned delivering meals, those weren't meant to be careers. Those are gaps. And if you decide to not improve yourself and give yourself options in the employment world, there are going to be consequences. One of the consequences is what you're going to get paid.
I'm jumping in here. I shouldn't do this. I shouldn't jump in. But the one concern I have with that is you also have to make sure that those jobs that you're talking about to aspire to, and enough of them do exist. If you don't have those jobs, if we don't have the industrial complex that is paying at a certain wage, if those jobs are going overseas, where the wage doesn't have to be very high, people aren't left with as many choices. They don't have something to aspire to because not enough of it exists. So we have to attack that problem as well. That's not disagreeing with your point about judgments and choices do have consequences. And you have to think some of these things through. Your take on what I just said there. We've only got about a minute or so left, but some thoughts on what this ordinance is representing.
I think that the ordinance is meant to represent equity from the standpoint of if an individual is providing a certain service, that they should be able to expect that they can have a job and still meet the basic needs of food, shelter, clothing, the minimum needs that an individual needs. And the federal poverty level, which is sort of the guide that's been used for this ordinance, if you look at the actual number, you're looking at $11.68 an hour, and that's the wage that would actually be applied, is a minimal wage in order to meet basic needs for individuals and families.
Catherine and Keith, thanks for your time this morning. We're going to post this for you at wyyradio.com. Part of this might be on our Newsmakers program this weekend, which can be heard Sunday on our stations here, our group of stations, including WYYY. And I'm sure this is just one part of this discussion that will continue. And I thought we got some great advice out of the overall show. Things like reach out to your supervisors, talk to them about this and about other issues that may be pending. It's important to let them know how you feel about the all issues, not just this one, but all issues for that matter. Luke and the Captain coming up next on 105.1 WYYY.